Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
What up, folks? Welcome into another edition of the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Good episode today, as I am excited to welcome in Drew Hill. He writes for the Daily Memphian. I'm going to mispronounce it a bunch of times when you hear the interview, but he works for the Daily Memphian, covers the Memphis Grizzlies, and you can follow him on Twitter at @DrewHill_DM. And that is the focus of today's episode, and how could it not be? The Memphis Grizzlies have been downright incredible. What they've been able to do as of late since November 28th, after a win last night over the Minnesota Timberwolves. Memphis now 21-4 straight up, 19-6 against the spread. They're 30-14 as of Friday, and the third seed in the Western Conference. And there's so much that goes into the Memphis Grizzlies as well, right? We're talking about their standing in the Western Conference in terms of legitimately winning it. We're talking about Ja Morant, the focus now of a lot of pushes for most valuable player. Taylor, I think, too, when you talk about awards, there is another member of the Memphis Grizzlies that deserves a lot of focus for an award. That would be Taylor Jenkins, who is 7-1 to win Coach of the Year. So we're going to get into all of that with Drew coming up in a couple of minutes. But I kind of wanted to put out here just a couple of things from my perspective before we get somebody who watches the team on an everyday basis. And I wrote about this a little bit in Point Spread Weekly this week. But the changes we've seen from the Memphis Grizzlies from the beginning of the year until now, it's been absolutely incredible. And, you know, we start through the first 19 games of the season, because if you remember, at the beginning of the season, it was something I brought up on this podcast. It was something I wrote about at the beginning of the season in Point Spread Weekly. But that the Memphis Grizzlies were kind of the bane of my existence, because they were one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA. They had a negative 7.5 net rating through the first 19 games. They were 9-10 straight up, and yet they were still covering numbers, you know, for whatever reason, however they were doing it. Still getting outscored by 7.5 points every 100 possessions, but only being a win below 500. And keep in mind, just to give you an idea, right, again, through about 19 games of the season, we're talking about a negative 7.5 net rating in non-garbage time minutes. To give you the teams in that area around that time of the season, Oklahoma City had a negative 8.4 net rating in non-garbage time. They were 6-13 compared to the 9-10 for Memphis at the time. The Los Angeles Lakers are actually one of those quizzical teams. They had a net rating that was 3 points better. They were 10-11 against the spread with a negative 4.5. New Orleans Pelicans, they were 5-16 through 21 games. They had a negative 9.2 net rating. So why that quizzical, like, how are the Memphis Grizzlies doing this? But to give you the change that has undergone this Memphis Grizzlies team in terms of just the statistical output of what we have seen from the Memphis Grizzlies, it's absolutely incredible what they've been able to do. So through those 19 games, again, 25th in net rating, they were negative 7.5. They were 15th in offense at 109.9 per 100 possessions, non-garbage time minutes, 30th in defensive efficiency at 117.4. But as of today, through this winning streak that, again, has them at 21-4 through the last 25 games, they are first in net rating over these 25 games, plus 13.7 in non-garbage time minutes. They are third in offensive efficiency at 116.3 and first in defensive efficiency at 102.6. And one of the things that I'm going to bring up with Drew here in the podcast that has really stuck out to me is if you look at the changes statistically for the Memphis Grizzlies, outside of the obvious, you know, defensive and offensive efficiency, you know, what has really changed? And the one thing that really sticks out to me is the turnover rate. If you look at them defensively through the first 19 games of the season, turnover rate for the Memphis Grizzlies, it was solid. It was above average. It was 14.4%. But if you look at these last 25 games, they are forcing a turnover on 16.6% of opponent possessions defensively. They're second best over those last 25 games. If you look at this current win, or this most recent win, over the Minnesota Timberwolves on Thursday night, turnover rate for the Minnesota Timberwolves in that game, 17.6%. It was absolutely nuts. And of course, one of the things that Memphis does so well, and in this game here, they added 5.2 points to their offensive rating through transition off of steals. Right, an offensive rating off of steals in transition of 175. So to me, that has been one of the biggest differences for Memphis, is defensively what has turned things around. And we're going to get to some of the other changes, right, in terms of the roster, guys being available, all of these things. But one of the biggest statistical changes for the Memphis Grizzlies has been the fact that they've been able to turn the ball over at a much higher rate, and they are one of the best teams in transition on offense off of steals, right? And you're seeing that play out. You saw it yesterday against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you're just seeing it throughout this entire time and through this 24-game run that they're currently on at this point right now. And if you look at on the season in transition right now, off of steals, they add 2.4 points per 100 possessions in transition off of steals. In terms of the frequency, and again, to spell this out, what percentage of a team's steals lead to a transition play? They are eighth in frequency at 65.9%. And how many points did the team score per 100 transition plays that came off of a steal? A play is anything that results in a shot, turnover, or free throws. Memphis Grizzlies are eighth on the season at 138.5, and they are one of the best in the NBA over these last 25 games. So for the team as a whole, that has really helped things out in terms of turning things around. But I also wanted to touch on a topic really quickly too, because I've gotten this this question a lot. I figured it'd be worth touching on topic-wise on this podcast. That's why we're talking to Drew here today, which is Ja Morant as MVP, right? And Ja Morant is having an incredible season. And rightfully so, right? One of the best players, actually the best player on one of the best teams in the Western Conference, to phrase it that way. 24.6 points per game this year, 48.5% shooting. He's shooting 36% from three. Technically, it's 35.9, but we'll round that up. So 36% from three. On top of that, 6.8 assists and 5.8 rebounds for Ja Morant. Assists are a little down this year, but rebounds are really up. And a lot of people, he's become a hot ticket to win most valuable player. And out of everything we've seen for the Memphis Grizzlies have been great. I do think that at this point right now, given the state of the Western Conference, you do have to include the Memphis Grizzlies as a contender to win the Western Conference. But if you're making a case for Ja Morant outside of, because with Drew, we're going to talk about the 12-game stretch without him and how they went 10-2 straight up without Ja Morant. To me, it's just, what is your value to your team when you are on the floor, right? And you guys know me, if you've listened to this podcast, if you've watched The Edge, how much, you know, so much of my analysis, you know, we can put numbers to this. We can put data forward that says, how much are you worth to your team? Well, when Ja Morant's on the court, the Memphis Grizzlies plus 2.9 in terms of their net rating. So they outscore opponents by essentially 3 points every 100 possessions. Their offensive rating of 115.4 ranks in the 86th percentile of qualified lineups. However, defensively, defensive rating is 112.5. That ranks in the 31st percentile of qualified lineups. Again, this is with Ja Morant on the floor, and that's not very good. And the other part of this is that net rating really isn't that impressive with Ja Morant on the floor. But the other part that I think works against Morant, the net rating with him off the floor this year is actually better. And their defensive rating is much better when he is off the floor. Their net rating with him on the court goes from plus 2.9 to plus 6.4. When he is off the court, their offensive rating suffers, as you expect, 111.7, but their defensive rating with him on the floor, again, to reiterate, 112.5, but with him off the floor, when he is not playing, from 112.5 to 105.3. So clearly he hampers their defense. It's plain as day. He's not the best defender of the world. He's an electric offensive player. But at the end of the day, when you're stacking his resume up against the others in the MVP conversation, Kevin Durant, Nikola Jokic, which should be up there, right? DeMar DeRozan, the guy that we have talked about on this podcast. I think his resume kind of pales in comparison to the others in terms of just pure value. But Drew's going to make a great point in terms of just winning games and being the best player on the best team, and maybe the Memphis Grizzlies do just that. So anyway, without further ado, don't want to waste much more of your time. We're going to talk with Drew Hill. We're going to discuss the Memphis Grizzlies as a whole. And a lot of other stuff. And Drew's going to make a great point about one of these awards, because Ja Morant is the odds-on favorite to win Most Improved Player. But there's somebody else on the Memphis Grizzlies at 35-1 that the Grizzlies want to win the award, and it's not Ja Morant. All right, let's welcome in a guest for this episode, Drew Hill, Memphis Grizzlies beat writer for the Daily Memph, and you can follow him on Twitter at @DrewHill_DM. And Drew, I appreciate the time. And, you know, we were talking off the air here, but it has to be a fun time for you and around the city. I mean, just before we get to like the hardcore sports stuff, what has been the vibe? Because not only is this team winning, but it's a fun team and it's a young team. And I would assume that adds to the excitement, because like, if I'm a fan and I've got a young core that looks like they're one of the best in the NBA, it's got to be insane.
Yeah, it's electric. It's electric everywhere here. The Memphis Tigers, the college team, entered with the number one recruiting class in all of college basketball. They've got Penny as their coach. So everyone was so excited for the Tigers season, and that has kind of not gone the way that they expected. And then on the other hand, you have the Grizzlies, who just came off a playoff run against the Jazz, and the expectations are maybe that they would take a little bit of a step back. They traded Jonas Valanciunas to make room for more of the young guys to get, you know, more of the touches and more of the shots. And instead of taking a step back, they've all taken this massive leap forward. And now here you are. They've won 11 games in a row. They're the talk of every NBA show. They led SportsCenter last night. And for a small market, obviously that's huge. And people are just thrilled that the Grizzlies are playing this way. The arena is jumping every single night. It's been a blast. It's been really a really fun month and a half.
So, and I personally, at least for me, part of what makes this story so incredible is the start of the year, right? Because the winning is great, but it's winning that comes after some losing at the beginning of the year and some ugly statistical outputs from this team. To, you know, walk us through the beginning portion of the year, because this is the team that started 9-10 through the first 19 games, and they were bad defensively. According to Cleaning the Glass through that stretch, they were dead last in defensive efficiency. So not only is this winning streak incredible, but it's the fact that you have literally, in some statistical categories, gone from worst to first over the span of a month and a half.
You know, there's a lot of things, and that's a very good point, and that's a point people bring up a lot, that their defense was really, really bad at the beginning of the year. And it was really the biggest reason why they were so inconsistent. They lost by 43 points to Minnesota. They beat Minnesota last night. First time they played Minnesota, they lost by 43 points. And part of it, I think it was a combination of really a trio of things. You had Steven Adams being integrated into the Memphis system. He was viewed as a upgrade over Jonas Valanciunas in the offseason. Defensively, in terms of versatility, he could do a little bit more. I mean, offensively, he's not the same player, but defensively, they thought he was going to be a little bit better. But it took him a little while to find his footing. Also, they didn't have Dylan Brooks. He had offseason hand surgery, so they're missing their heart and soul of their defense, the guy who puts forth the hardest defensive effort every single night. So he's out of the picture. And they were playing rookie Zaire Williams significant minutes. And Zaire Williams was not even that great of a college player. He was a great high school prospect, but when he got to Stanford, it was not a great college player. And he wasn't necessarily ready at the beginning of the year. Now, it was strategic that they were throwing him in the fire like that, because obviously you've seen what he's been able to do over the last few games. He went out with an ankle injury, had a chance to watch. He's come back, and now he's a much better player. He's getting adjusted to the NBA game. But that trio of things really hurt him early in the year. And then you see Ja Morant go out, and it almost felt like on a night-to-night basis, it was Ja's going to have to be spectacular, or the Grizzlies have no chance at winning because they're giving up so many points defensively. And you really saw Memphis refocus and say, all right, if we're going to win games without Ja, it starts with fixing this defense. And Memphis went from the worst defense in the NBA to a much better defense in the NBA, the number one defense in the NBA during that 10-2 stretch that they played without Ja Morant. And people began asking, is Ja the problem with the defense? Is that why the defense got much better? But I think it was really just a refocusing that was necessary. And in the end, you know, if Ja never gets hurt, who knows if that happens, but it's actually worked out in their favor now. Ja's come back, and they've just maintained this excellent defense that they've been playing, and they look like a totally different team and now one of the contenders in the West.
So one of the things that has stuck out to me when I've looked at their, like, you know, profile in terms of the difference from the first 19 games to this winning streak that they're currently on. And for those who don't know, to zoom out here, because we talk about the winning streak since November 28th, they're 21-4 straight up, 19-6 against the spread, and now third in seed in the Western Conference. So this is, for those who are just tuning in to the Grizzlies, it's not just this winning streak. They have been insane for the last month and a half now. But what stuck out to me, Drew, is the fact that, like, the turnover rate defensively seems to have skyrocketed. Like, over these last 25 games, they're first in the NBA. And if you look at some of the numbers that Cleaning the Glass has, they're one of the best in terms of transition offense off of steals. And to me, that's been one of the big differences. You could see it yesterday. They were forcing turnovers left and right. They're getting baskets easily against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Well, is the turnover thing, is that just something that's happening? Or is that something that, when you look at this coaching staff and what they've done defensively with the game plan, is that something Taylor Jenkins is kind of coaching up here and emphasizing?
Yeah, it's all about activity for the Grizzlies. That's the word that they've chosen to use. And activity can mean a lot of different things, but it mostly just means making sure you're flying around, trying to cause as much chaos as you possibly can. Always be moving. Always keep your hands up. They lead the league in blocks. They lead the league in steals. They lead the league in fast break points. As a result of this chaos that they're able to create, they have a young, quick, fast team, and that's definitely helped them. You mentioned all these games that they've covered. I think it says something about last night. The Grizzlies did not play well last night. Yep. They made 7 less threes than the Minnesota Timberwolves. I believe teams are like 105-10 when the other team makes more than 7 threes. I don't know if I think that's this season. And the Grizzlies are one of those 10 because they were able to create enough chaos and make enough plays at the end to win. And they played bad and they still covered against Minnesota. And it all is a credit to this defense. And it starts with guys like John Conchar, who played great last night. The Grizzlies, you know what you're getting from them on a night in, night out basis. They're a team that plays really hard. They're a team that hustles. And that's not always a given for NBA teams, especially during the regular season, but it has been for the Grizzlies.
Yep. And it is fitting that a guy, John Conchar, who most people would be like, who? It comes up with 15 points, 17 rebounds, and is 3 of 4 from three to lead him to a victory last night. By the way, one of the better nicknames in basketball, the Magic Conch, is that what it is?
Yeah, the Magic Conch, that's one of them. Actually, I would say his most common nickname is Jitty, yeah. Which – it's just a word that he made up. It literally, he said there's no meaning behind it at all. He just created that word and decided that that was what his nickname was going to be. And now he has a whole line of like merch that he sells and his teammates wear it all the time to the games. So Jitty, J-I-T-T-Y is the other nickname for John Conchar, or the Magic Conch. I prefer to go with the Magic Conch.
Yeah. As a SpongeBob fan, right in my youth, the Magic Conch is for me the way to go, but I'm also a big fan of the Slim Reaper for Kevin Durant that hasn't really seemed to catch on. All right, Drew Hill's with us at Daily Memphis. Let's get into some betting standpoint here from topics. We could spin this out going forward. Let's talk about some big picture stuff first. One of the things that has surprised me with the betting market, we'll get to MVP and all those things. To me, when I'm looking at this overall, I think Taylor Jenkins has been one of the most underrated coaches the last few years. He's done a tremendous job with this team overall. Player development speaks for itself, the way they've been competitive each and every single year since he's been there. He is still right now the fifth choice to win coach of the year on the board at this point. And I have to tell you, with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the injuries that they have taken, and right, J.B. Bickerstaff's team kind of falling back to the pack, we see what's going on with the Golden State Warriors. You know, Billy Donovan is the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference. That's fine, but they haven't had a stretch like this. How is Taylor Jenkins not the favorite to win this award at this point?
It's a little surprising to me as well. I think if you were to make an argument for someone else, if the Nets end up being the best team in the East – and, you know, Steve Nash is sitting there, towards the top of this board, obviously. But if the Nets are able to be the best team, given the circumstances of missing Kyrie for such a significant chunk of games and what Kevin Durant's able to do, I mean, he's obviously one of those MVP candidates as well. I can understand why so that he might be the favorite there, but I think Taylor Jenkins definitely deserves a hard look. No one expected the Grizzlies to be this good. And usually coach of the year means coach who has his team overperform relative to expectations the most. And if the Grizzlies finish third in the West ahead of the Utah Jazz, you got to look at what they have left on their schedule. It's easy to see that the Grizzlies could stay right where they are in this top tier of the West. They're going to play 7 out of 10 games against teams with a losing record in February. They have the third easiest schedule in the NBA the rest of the way to go. I think that if the Grizzlies maintain this sort of trajectory, Taylor Jenkins certainly has a pretty good chance to win Coach of the Year.
Yeah, and they're set to blow by their win total, too. Preseason win total was 42.5, right? And they're already at, 30 wins?
They've done that the last 2 years. This is going to be the third year in a row that they're going to blow by their win total. It's impressive. Yep.
So from that award to the next, and this is where I find this conversation really interesting, because
Ja Morant, you know, he has become a sexy name for most valuable player, right? I've had people text me, hey, man, I threw some on Ja Morant. What do you think about Ja Morant to win MVP? And I want to pick your brain on this because you watch this team up close, and we have talked about this, just mentioned it, but that 12-game stretch without Morant in which they go 10-2, that sticks in my mind. If you look at some of the numbers like on-court, off-court, their net rating without Morant on the court is actually better. With him on the court, right? There's little things here and there, and this isn't to denigrate Morant because he's absolutely incredible. But when you're talking about race for most valuable player and a guy who means the most to his team, I personally, especially given the current odds, find it hard to get myself in the camp of that's worth investing in right now. What's the case for him to win this award? Or do you agree with me in the sense that, you know, it's hard at this current number to kind of get into it?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I want to add another point. The 10-2 stretch without Ja Morant, unless you like the Grizzlies are not a fluke, right? The Grizzlies are legitimately a good team. I believe that they're a Western Conference contender. I'm not saying that they would beat the Suns or the Warriors in a playoff series, but I'm just saying it's possible, right? They're good enough to where that is a possibility. They would certainly be an underdog, but that 10-2 stretch that they went without Ja Morant, it was a fluke because a lot of those teams that they played were missing their best player. I think like 7 or 8 of those games at least were against decent teams that were missing their best player. Mm. So if you're going to make an argument for Morant or an argument against Morant, saying that the team went 10-2 without him, I don't know. You hear that a lot. You hear that basically from everyone that wants to sort of move away from the Ja Morant MVP argument. If I'm trying to make an argument for him to be MVP, I would say who has elevated their team more than Ja Morant relative to expectations, right? And if you're going to bet on Ja Morant to win MVP, you're essentially betting that we're going to have some sort of Derrick Rose type scenario where the Grizzlies are so unbeatable at the end of this year. And like we said, the schedule is going to be soft, that somehow they could finish first in the West or maybe second in the West or close to second in the West. And it's just undeniable the impact that he's had, mm-hmm. where you end up having a, you know, in past seasons, the one that you want to point to is Derrick Rose, who at a similar age led the Bulls top of the conference. He has very similar statistics right now to, or Ja has very similar statistics right now to what Derrick Rose had in his MVP season. I think you're more so betting that the Grizzlies are going to win games than you think Ja Morant's going to be the most impressive player in the NBA. I would rather go out, look elsewhere. Like I think Kevin Durant obviously is a good option. Steph Curry is not having his best season. I wonder if later on in the year, people say, well, Steph is the favorite, but are we really going to vote this guy for MVP when he's not having his best season? And Kevin Durant has been amazing for most of the year. If I'm looking at MVP, I don't know. I obviously, Ja's our money maker here, right? He's the guy that gets all the attention on Memphis. So everybody loves Ja Morant. But I don't think that if I was a better, I'd be, you know, jumping to bet on Ja MVP futures. I'd go in the direction of Kevin Durant.
Now I will say, when I'm looking at Morant and his profile to win an award, and he is the odds on favorite to do so here. I mean, if he maintains this stretch of play where he's just playing at this baseline, I don't know how the odds on him to win most improved aren't like minus 300 at this point right now.
Yeah, it's funny. He doesn't want that award.
Really? And I can understand that, right? Like to a certain extent, it's like, hey, man, you're better than you were last year. Congratulations. And it's like, no, man, like I'm the best player potentially in the best team in the Western Conference. I want that.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't want that award. And I think it's because he thought he was this good last year. This is a guy that scored 40 plus points in playoff game at Utah last year. I mean, he was an incredible player before this season. I think he is going to win most improved player, despite the fact that he does not want the award at all. He wants Desmond Bane to win that award, his teammate. And I think Desmond Bane would be a good choice if Ja Morant wasn't on his team. When you look back at the most improved player winners in the past, I actually wrote about this about a month ago when the Grizzlies were really pushing to try to get Bane in the conversation for this award. When you look back, the vast majority of these most improved player winners are first-time all-stars. Well, we know Ja's going to be a first-time All-Star this year, so he fits that bill. And then on average, it's point increase by roughly 5 points per game, and then all of the other stuff is sort of extra. Ja's increases points per game by 6, so he fits that, you know, the criteria in that way as well. And then in addition to that, you typically don't see second-year players win NBA's most improved player. So that's probably going to prohibit a lot of the other candidates from winning the award. There are some voters that, like I've talked to people in the media, simply will not vote a second year player in the NBA for most improved. Wow. So that works against guys like Desmond Bane, LaMelo Ball, and those types of players. So yes, I think Ja will end up being the NBA's most improved player when it's all said and done.
Yeah, odds right now for those listening, Ja Morant -190, Miles Bridges +425. And these are courtesy of DraftKings, so it's one shop. DeJounte Murray 13-1, Darius Garland 19. You can find Desmond Bane down there at 35-1. Same odds as LaMelo Ball and Jared Allen. So, all right, let's go big picture then here. And I think it's really fascinating when we talk about Memphis in terms of the pecking order of the Western Conference. And, you know, I saw one of your tweets a couple of days ago, right, where it's in reference to like the odds and the reflection of the order of the Western Conference and where the Memphis Grizzlies stand. And I got to tell you, you know, you look, you know, we briefly mentioned the Warriors and Steph Curry and how this has kind of been derailed a little bit. They look average, essentially. The Utah Jazz, they got a lot of issues in the front court with availability. But overall, you know, I got to tell you, like, if you were to fast forward me to the end of the season and we're in the NBA Finals and it's the Memphis Grizzlies, like, given the makeup of the Western Conference, I wouldn't be really shocked that that's actually the case.
Yeah, I agree. Look, the Grizzlies are so young and so inexperienced in the playoffs that I wouldn't be surprised if they were bounced out of the first round either.
Yeah. Right?
Like, the spectrum here just of what could happen for the Grizzlies come playoff time is pretty wide. And they have the talent to win the West. I truly believe that. Just look at what they've accomplished this season, the teams that they've beaten already this year. They've beaten the Suns on the road. They've beaten the Warriors 2 out of 3, including on the road. They've beaten the Nuggets twice. They've blown the doors off the Lakers 3 times. So, you know, this is a team that has already performed well against these teams in the West. My question, I have 2 major questions for the Grizzlies going into the playoffs, and this is what would give me a little bit pause if I were to decide I would bet on the Grizzlies to win the West. The first is, how are the Grizzlies going to look when everyone is available? Because what we've learned this year is that they've been able to play great when they're shorthanded, and they are currently shorthanded at the moment. Dylan Brooks and Ja Morant have played 162 minutes together this season. That's not a lot compared to, you know, pretty much everyone else on the team. They've played in like 7 games together. And there is a dynamic there that is interesting because Dylan, he takes a lot of shots. He's a high volume shooter. And the Grizzlies are 0-4 when Dylan Brooks takes more shots than Ja Morant, and 2-0 when Ja Morant takes more shots than Dylan Brooks when they're on the court together. Dylan's a guy that's pretty hard to rein in. He's a guy that the Grizzlies are going to have to get, you know, under control and make sure that he doesn't hurt these offensive efficiency numbers. He's also an elite defender and a player that the Grizzlies really, really want back so that they can have a guy like that on the floor. That's the guy who will chase around Steph Curry. You know, that's the guy who will spend a lot of the time defending Devin Booker. So he's an important piece, but he's a piece that they need to get ironed out before the start of the playoffs. That's question number one. Question number two is, we've seen how deep the Grizzlies are. We've seen how hard they play in the regular season. That's really helping them now. But in the playoffs, when it gets cranked up to another level and when depth doesn't matter as much because the best players are playing heavier minutes, how will that affect Memphis? They have enough talent to win the West. They have a good enough team to win the West. But are they ready to win the West? I think that's a little bit of a different question.
Yeah, I can't wait. And as you pointed out multiple times in our interview here, the schedule works out for them very much going forward. So this is going to be one where I don't think this slows down at any point. The covers, you know, the covering at such a high rate might stop because the books at some point will adjust and look at power rated to the moon. But man, the wins are going to continue to come. All right. Again, Drew Hill at @DrewHill_DM up on Twitter, works for the Daily Memphis. And where can people find your work outside of the written word? You have a podcast too, right?
Yeah, we have a podcast. It's called the Daily Memphian Memphis Grizzlies Podcast. Sometimes I talk about betting a little bit there. And then I'm also frequently on 92.9 ESPN here in Memphis too. If you follow the Grizzlies, I'm sure you know of that. That's a very popular radio station. But yeah, we cover it all. So you can go follow it there as well.